Sure.
Testing.
Yep.
Testing.
It awesome.
Looks like we're good to go.
Cool.
Sweet.
Just out of curiosity, can you guys just see my soul video?
Yeah. You're the only person.
I'm out here.
That's a legit looking setup there.
You know, thank God for the 11-inch screen.
Yeah.
We have a fairly legitimate spot in Portland that also kind of serves as there's so many just Zoom meetings in general now, so it serves as like a good little, it justified me like balling it out a little bit because it also serves as sort of the designated Zoom nook.
It's the Zoom,
yeah.
Zoom room.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Well, you want to try this Zoom room, see if we can get this podcast
this,
off
zoom
or what
in the room. Yeah,
let's do this thing then.
I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden it will all become lovely. The flower that opens in the morning light.
Ooh. We met today's guest at Funk in the Water back in 2019. Quick little chat and we went our separate ways. And for me personally, watching from away, just kind of always kept an eye, saw you collaborating with friends of ours that have been on the podcast, breweries that I look up to that haven't been on the podcast. Did a permanent hangover collab based around Goosebumps and R.L. Stine that certainly got my attention. And became a good beer hunting signifier, I believe, last year. So it's been cool to kind of sit from away, keep an eye on what's going on, and finally sit down with you today and have a conversation. So today we got Tommy Kennedy from Holmes Brewery, Smooge Seltzer, and Dozer Coffee. That's a trifecta of brands.
The trifecta.
Thanks for taking the time, Tommy. How you doing, man?
Yeah, super stoked to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
And you're coming from Ann Arbor, Michigan, a place I'm very, very unfamiliar with. Maybe to start off,
big Ohio State guy.
Oh, no.
No, I'm just kidding.
But could you kind of paint a picture of the area, the market, and then what Holmes Brewery is? We'll start there within it.
Yeah, it's like certainly a college town first and foremost. I was just in Portland, as you know, recently. I feel like it has a lot of similarities other than no water, and you guys have some pretty awesome restaurants. I'd say you got us there. I think it starts with like the college scene, very like tech heavy, and our brewery kind of sits in a spot that's away from town and kind of is more of a local hang for the residents instead of not really at the college scene as much as we are like the young professionals and folks that are there for the long haul.
And what was the scene like before that? You know, Michigan has a lot of just really like early inspiring breweries for me, even up to Founders or whatever. But unless I'm forgetting, is Jolly Pumpkin in Ann Arbor?
Jolly Pumpkin, yeah, has an Ann Arbor spot. Their main like facility is in Dexter, which is like a town over.
Mm. So in that kind of general region.
Yeah, real close by.
But what else was there to serve? What it's a fairly big size. It's definitely a bigger town than Portland, right?
Yeah, I think it's like 140,000-ish. I think it was Portland like 60 or so.
Yeah, 70, about double the size. Would strike me as. It seemed like an underserved beer market is what I'm getting at.
For sure. And actually, it's a funky dichotomy in Michigan where like, because it was a pretty early beer scene with the Founders and Bells of the world. Mm-hmm. A lot of those really like were early enough that could capture like the distro market and really take off in a pretty serious way. Some of the older national big craft distributor or craft breweries in the country. And so there were quite a few like next wave behind them that were in like the medium size level of distribution. And then just a lot of like smaller brew pubs and smaller craft breweries. And I would say we really like late to the game relative to them, but felt like our place was to do something that was a little bit more curated and higher end and, you know, in-house only. Really, admittedly, took a lot of inspiration from some of the more OG breweries like Alchemist and Russian River that kind of kept more in-house. And then by the time that we were considering opening a brewery, we were actually looking at the other halves and you guys and others that were doing like the in-house releases and lines, that it gave us a chance to, we knew we couldn't fight the distribution battle in Michigan. So we were content to just kind of capture it all in-house and draw people to us and make sure that we were wowing them with an experience in-house instead of, instead of just trying to build a brand in volume only. But stay flexible, kind of have no, we don't really have many core staple beers. I know that's kind of more of a thing you guys do too. Just try to stay flexible and creative and keep being good enough to justify people making the trek to come see us.
I mean, from what I've seen from afar, flexible would be an understated word to use for just how you guys have evolved. And truly, as someone who feels like a stick in the mud a lot of the time in terms of just being more conservative with just business stuff, I would be completely lying if I said it wasn't on the other side of that coin, like really inspiring to see someone like you guys that is constantly kind of taking these from afar. You know, I'm sure, sure if you're in that framework every day, it's a little more predictable maybe, but from afar, that just looks like really intrepid, surprising moves.
Yeah, we need to get more predictable, I think, because we are very pretty unpredictable.
How baked into the framework of just sort of the perspective of opening the brewery was that approach?
It was pretty much the approach. It was like, let's just pursue whatever like we're interested in and what like our enthusiastic audience is psyched about. And I would say like you're definitely, especially on the brewer side, I'm not a brewer at all. I open this without ever brewed a beer before. I still have never actually brewed. But Nick, you guys met at that festival. Mm-hmm. So
how do you pronounce his last name? Is it Panchame?
Panchame. Yeah. Mm. It's Honduran. He's half Honduran, half German. So Han German, but he is, he's definitely more on your side, Noah, where like there's, I think a lot of just romanticism in like the purity of brewing. And I think that we have a really good balance. I probably, knowing that I wasn't a brewer, left my job to like open a brewery, having not brewed before, was definitely intimidating. And I just knew that whoever it was needed to learn how to like fight well with me and be super creative, but also be, willing to, kind of duke it out. Like, and as long as we both trust each other's intentions, we'll get to a place that like is the right spot. So, that's him for sure. He's just my brewery soulmate.
And his interview on, craft beer and brewing not too long ago was great. I really enjoyed that episode.
Awesome.
And can you just refresh people who haven't heard that, how you guys came into being? Because with a business partner, I have a very linear way of looking at it. Well, you pick your sibling, right? so when that's taken out of it, explain how that gets a trust in another person, gets to a point where you're like, yeah, let's do this together.
You know, I can relate to you. My previous job before opening the brewery was I worked actually with my brother in home healthcare, his company. I kind of worked in retail for 5 years and then made the transition over to help put kind of the handle the op side of the business and support him as it growed into several states. And so I definitely know those dynamics. And I think that was tough because we both had our own like vision for what it should be. Mm. And it made it tough to have like a singular voice that was just like the decider. And I think that there's like no country with two presidents for a reason. Like you need someone that has just like final say on things. And I think when deciding to move on from that, really learned a lot in my time there, but, realized I wanted to like build a culture and a work environment that was really, centered on like me making sure that I was like clearing the path for creative folks to do their life's work. And so many times there are breweries that open, brewers open breweries that don't have the business sense, even though they've got all the talent and the passion in the world, it is tough to just like have both things at once. And so, I really wanted to find someone that had that sort of creativity and spark, but also the humility to know that like, yeah, I'm just gonna, I'll handle as much of the business stuff as I can, but we're not gonna like grab every dollar on the table. We're gonna really try to like nurture this and make sure that we're stabilizing the community and making sure people are engaged in it and not have it feel like it's a money grab or something yeah. like that. I think sometimes when you're not a brewer, there's the temptation for it to be viewed as like business guy or something that's less than pure, I guess is probably the word I'd use.
Yeah.
But really like, I think the truth is like, I just want to show it in my decision-making and make sure that I can back my decisions with some sort of justification that's for the greater good. So Nick really resonated with that and we just hit it off. And I mean, we spent, moved down a year before we actually opened the brewery. And that was a year of like the first day he got there, I was just like, man, if we're going to be good, we have to just get great at fighting and just like love each other through it. And
we have to just, get great at fighting.
We do. You do. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think if shook his hand, if you're a fucking idiot. Yes. Get right to some insults.
So are you, man. So are you. But truly, that's an incredible concept. We have to get good at fighting.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And I think that's true in like any relationship where like if you're not fighting, then someone's probably getting walked all over. So yeah. I really think that you got to make yourself open to taking it. And we spent that next year, him, living at the house that was on the site of the brewery, him brewing in my garage, like every, most days of the week and trialing some beers with like a poker group I had where we'd give them free beer and just make them give us critical feedback. And, if anyone gave us all 5 stars, he'd be like, please just like shit on it for a minute. Like, just give us your most.
My man, no
I need, I need the still. Information. I need the real information.
Hurt me. So, I think that was tons of like dialogue around the beers then. And then we did a couple beer trips, including one way back where we did like up through Canada, down through Vermont, Maine, and stopped by Bissell. Way back after we'd done the Allagash tour that you have to do.
Yep.
Totally.
And I think you had just moved into the new location.
Cool.
Back then.
Cool.
So even on those trips, we would just, have 9 hours in the car together to find something to fight.
You'll get good at fighting. That's a great way to get good at fighting. Real quick, I just want to unpack there a tiny bit further with kind of what Noah said about being the other side of the coin for some of his sensibilities, and kind of very quickly in talking with you within 10 minutes, you can see the level of depth and thought and intention behind a lot of this. I just want to unpack there a little further, because certainly like at face value, you could look at the portfolio of brands, the colors, and see like a degree of hype to it. But when you speak to the early success, you talk about principles like staying small, staying narrowly focused, and staying nimble. Can you kind of draw the through line to what could be deemed as kind of opposite poles, how those principles do tie together to the outcome?
Yeah, I think some of like what has happened that, goes beyond homes is because I think we've been disciplined about staying small.
Mm-hmm.
We're like... I think Smooge is a great example of that, where, we were, of course, dabbling in lots of different fruit beers and really trying to hone in the skills with fruit usage. And, we're asked about whether or not we do a seltzer. I guess lots of people asked us, but certainly we were asked for an interview and we were just like, I don't think we would do like a normal seltzer. It's just not really something we are passionate about. That was actually at a craft brewers conference, and Nick and I walked away from it just being like, well, what's actually like good about the seltzer? What are the attributes that are maybe useful? And really like it was the neutral flavor. It's easy to produce. And really when we were thinking about like the fruit usage in beer, like a lot of times you're just like putting enough fruit in it to not taste any beer, right? Uh-huh. So I think the idea that we were like not actually like not trying to hide something at all with the fruit, but actually just like letting it be like a neutral, you know, playground for us. But I feel like, you know, even that we didn't have any bandwidth because of how much we had going on with festivals and things like that, where it was about a year before, you know, COVID hit and we were like, well, let's do something with this extra bandwidth and time. And, you know, all our flights are canceled and stuff. So, really took off from there, and like started experimenting with that. But it was really based off of us, like, being disciplined about staying small, like having the bandwidth to do it, creating some space to like do something, that was like beyond just beer. And I think that's even our cafe, kind of same thing, Dozer, that the coffee shop is like, we've got some extra bandwidth to do something different. We think it'll enhance our like space and give us like, you know, full daytime experience for our staff and for our customers. And, you know, I think because we're small and not just like worrying about fulfilling distro orders, I think we've got like extra wiggle room to like imagine something that might actually not, it might not work out and that's fine. Or it might be something small and that's okay. Whereas I think if you just are, if you're growing it to be, you know, a volume game or in distribution, I think like rightly so, you need to be really focused on kind of just executing on those core brands. And it, that does take up some of that space, from the drop in the bucket that you might get from some small innovation. So I think I'm excited about that part of, our program too. Is just, we still do, you know, these lab tastings every week where we're just like trying different flavors and processes and, you know, really putting a focus on like product and, just trying to stay nimble. And that's why even now we just are still, as long as we can fight the good fight, plan on not distributing homes, just so we can keep that as like an in-house, like destination only, item. So that might not age well if it's different 5 years from now, but for now I'm very convicted about it.
So you guys haven't sold a drop of liquid that you're not controlling the sale of?
A drop is probably strong, but pretty much like we've sent minus a few kegs of buddies and stuff like that.
Yeah. Stuff like that.
Yeah. Festival. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah.
It's, wow.
Yeah. And like, that's probably, you know, increasingly hard as I think things have really shifted in the market. Mm-hmm. You know, post COVID, I think that's like probably a long diatribe we could have, but certainly like the beer as a currency is like a part of the like thing for like our style of brewery where, people buy it here to trade it for Bissell Brothers or other half or our peers. And when everybody shifted to packaging, it certainly like changed the currency value. And I think there's like shifting tastes too. So I think like the, if we want to stay like that with homes, we just have to be content with, staying a certain size for that specific business or opening new tap rooms or other ways to like control the product and still serve it to people.
Do you still just have the one tap room at the moment?
It's the tap room. The original tap room was opened 5 years ago. And then we opened that campus, which is where our production facility is, our major production facility for homes and then Smooge and then the coffee roaster, the cafe, a little gallery space, event space. So it's kind of like a commissary kitchen. So that's like the runway for like all of our staff to try new things and be creative and, you know, come up with new fun ideas. We had like a talent show or a variety show that a staff member put on. A bunch of our staff is like super talented and was in that. Like we've got just like, you know, our chefs doing different pop-ups there. So it's just like, really trying to make sure that it's not just like the beer staff that gets to do the fun stuff, but like create space for everybody to like pursue their passions.
Damn. Just for my own selfish curiosities, can you tell me about the shipping containers on the roof?
Yeah, that is super interesting. So we actually didn't have a ton of space in the original brew pub. Mm-hmm. For the whole brewing setup is about 1,500 square feet. So, and then the whole building is 5,000 square feet. So we put it up there and put like a ladder to get up to it to house our glycol chiller and boiler and air compressor and stuff. So it's functional.
Very functional. And it makes for a striking sight when you see the building, obviously for me just digitally, but, it stands out immediately and I was struck by it and excited by it.
that's kind of it for both our spots too. We like for home specifically, just committed to zero ad spend. That has like a small sign in the front. It's very nondescript. And then it's kind of like turn the corner and there's a shipping container and the awning and the fire pits and like just kind of like this facing the neighborhood, like nondescript, drove by it a million times, it didn't see it. And that's our campus is similar. It's like on an industrial drive and no sign. But you do drive by and you're like, what is that? Yeah. Like, why is that building here? So
you can't not look really and like kind of ask yourself more questions.
For sure. And I think that's like out of the gates, people will give you, you know, shit about it. But like the truth is like, it's like fun to have things that are discoverable and fun to like, once you know, you know, and if we're good enough, people will tell each other or they'll find it. So yeah, I don't want people to come because we told them to come. I want them to come because their friend told them to, you know.
Totally.
That's super interesting to hear the commitment to that, you know, because I think like a lot of brewers of our generation are not, most are spending like very minimal to none at dollars on traditional advertising, maybe through some like Instagram ad or something like that, but, you know, new print ad or that just isn't. At least it doesn't seem like that's really getting any squeeze from anyone. But to sort of double down on that and then really add cachet really in a lot of ways by making it a secretive thing. So that I say that because it does frame my reference point for when I do ask about other tap rooms. When that's kind of that's been an ongoing conversation for us for a lot, like Beyond Milo, which is a big one, but it wasn't really just a tap room. It was a brewery that served a purpose to make other types of beers. But we do circle back to it a lot, but it's hard to sort of figure out where that would make sense in a lot of ways, not be cannibalistic. Yeah. But then when you add in the element of you kind of want to be a fly under the radar at the same point, it seems like it would make those considerations even more difficult. Is that something you think you guys might do, or just one of the many pots on the stove?
In terms of opening up another tap room?
Yeah, for homes.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was just recently considering doing another tap room in Detroit. Actually, like a buddy of mine and I had an offer on a building and we're considering it. It was in a great spot. It was kind of like almost like a main and main spot, like a really like great corner. And it admittedly, like, just with all I going on, it was the first time I've ever like started to go down a road and not just like seen it through where I was like, I just think.
First time you failed. You
know, we've got enough going on. No, I fail all the time. but I did have a little bit of like a momentary, like, if I'm taking the lead on this, like, this feels like more of the same for me. So I'm a little less excited about it. If I had like a team member that was like, man, it would be great to grow, you know, two or three more spots over the next like 5 years, like, I would be more gung ho about that if I could just like trust it to somebody else and support them. But because I was kind of like leading the charge on it, I was like, man, this is just not my. Like, I did this twice now in the last 5 years, and this was super fun, but also like takes a lot of your energy. I love like the building design and stuff like that too. So I like to be super involved in that. But with Smooge and all the stuff we wanted to do at campus, like, it just felt like let's for once just chill out and say no. So
I know that feeling. But, yeah. And I think it becomes increasingly important because it on one hand, it is against sort of what you're supposed to do with a business in a lot of ways. It's supposed to be like always what's next. But I think the more people I talk to now, the more that A seems, whether that's just sort of emotion, like spiritually unfulfilling in the way of like, because I think kind of reflecting on the sense that you had, it just sort of seems like, why am I doing it? Why are we doing this? And I think that's really where a tap room comes back to a lot, where Milo was such a slam dunk for, okay, makes sense in every way besides location.
Income, location.
But in every other way makes...
They always say location doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right? Yep,
it's everything but...
It's no location, no location, no location. But yeah, with that thing of like, huh, I'm not feeling the spark on any... And hopefully that'll come at some point and it all makes sense. But yeah, I could not relate to you more with just the way you laid that out. But Detroit seems like a...
Ian, how are you...
Go for it.
How are you dividing that work too? Like when you were building out Milo, like how much are you involved in like every detail of like executing the space and the service and everything?
It was interesting for both of us because for Pete, my brother would definitely fall more in your role, 1,000%. Also, is never he might argue, but he definitely hasn't proved to fear either. But for up here, we took for granted in Portland just the proximity that we were living in. Where in each time when a new spot, whether you were doing it yourself or you were just naturally going to be there. So there was the physical distance of being up here did lead to some things that were, I guess, regrettable in terms of like, it was mostly like nuts and bolts construction type stuff, like GC stuff. We still have like these floors that slant every which direction.
Wrong direction.
And, yeah, I had so much problems with plumbing, things like that. But at the same time, if I was here, I'm not really sure if I would have been able to be like, the plumbing's gonna be bad.
Can we check that grade? We check that grade?
I guess that's a really bad answer to you. We were involved, but less involved than we had been in the past. And I think we realized that sort of after the fact. But with any place, you make it your own no matter what, no matter how the starting is. And now for work dividing, I mean, there's no like brewing staff or anything up here. I'll come up most weeks, usually for a night, so kind of have a day on each side of that. And when I can, bring someone from Portland. But it's certainly something that's been on the discussion a lot, like what the next move is for here. But yeah, to the same vein, it's nice to be on a really micro scale where you're talking about a move of like, okay, we have 6 full-time staff here. Versus 70
nice.
Or something like that in Portland. So it's a very different, it's much easier to swallow sort of the conception of expansion on that frame. But hopefully that answered your question a little bit. That was all over the place.
Yeah, for sure. But so you certainly can relate to that sort of like, it's, yeah, I mean, it's, even though you did less with the second spot in terms of construction, it still is like it's a big like time suck, and it's not, while you're doing it, it's not necessarily like in the moment, you're actually like not doing the rest of your business any sort of service, because it's not like generating anything or employing anybody. It's just taking your time away from kind of the core things that would be better if you were giving your time to that, right?
Totally.
So it's like,
yep. Yeah. And one way so energy. Much more money than you expect it to, always.
always.
One way energy and one way money until it is open.
Yeah. Exactly.
You said something a little bit ago when you were talking about revisiting expansion again. You kind of really framed around excitement. And that kind of seemed what I was gathering from that earlier answer about like what that through line is that like when you're truly naturally excited about it, that's kind of where you point the turrets. Can you talk about that a little bit? Do you use natural excitement as a barometer for business decisions essentially?
Yeah, I do. I think for me, I would say a lot of my perspective is rooted in what I like feel fulfilled by, which is I really like kind of that making things safe and good for others. And like, I was always a kind of a community builder and gatherer of folks. And I'm definitely not the life of the party. That's not really my role. I'm like the party planner that like sinks into the back and make sure, and worries about everybody having a good time, you know? So it's, but so I'd say like a lot of like, even my, motivation is like excitement about like what other people could do with us and make sure that like people are getting to do their life's work under my watch. So I would say like, I am content to be a little bit more behind the scenes and less on podcasts usually because
well we appreciate it.
No worries. But I'd say like a lot of my excitement kind of drives even Smooge like was to circle back to that again, but we had that idea. There was, you know, all of a sudden you go from like what you think is like the, you know, we've so successful in terms of like what we're trying to do by launching Smooge 3 years mm-hmm. in and like feel like we're clicking on all cylinders. And then all of a sudden I'm, you know, 2 months later, I'm laying off my whole staff, you know, for COVID. And I feel like, and then really relying on that core audience of, you know, 1,000 or so people, they're probably like the rabid local fans of homes mm-hmm. that, really, you know, helped weather us through the early parts of COVID. And I'd say like launching Smooge in part was to like conceive it as like something we could scale up and have it be in distribution without disrupting homes and create like this other brand that does something different for us to kind of help support and stabilize like our overall ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I think that's a lot of like my motivation. I continue to kind of be mostly focused on Smooge right now for that reason, just because I think it's like the like first thing in like a series of like more scalable, like more beverage company, like in distribution items that like I want to keep expanding on that so that we can, you know, can keep increasing our tent and inviting more people into doing their life's work with us.
What part of that specific work instead of on premise is exciting you the most to give more energy there?
With like Smooge, mm-hmm. you mean? You know, I think it's crazy. So aspirationally when we were like business planning and going all those trips, we were like, man, if one day we could be invited to these festivals or we could be like in this peer group, I'm sure you can relate to this.
Totally.
No, but, and then you get there and it's amazing. And like, you're like, oh man, I'm like peers with these people that I really admire.
Except that moment doesn't really even happen. like that realization of like, I'm here. Like that never really happens in the way you expect it to.
I mean, I think I agree to a certain extent that I feel like I definitely tried to like celebrate it because it, you know, it was something that was like in the plan and took like some intentionality to get totally. There. But then like, it certainly, there's of course like and now what,
right.
And then like 3 years in the business, we were kind of where we wanted to be. And we got there and we're, you know, traveling 6 weekends in a row for, you know, for festivals. And on the way back from, I think it was on the way back from Pastry Town, which was like the event right before the world shut down.
Oh, right.
I was literally telling Nick, I was like, I just feels like we like I need to grow in a way that like I can't quite wrap my head around right now. And so when that happened, I felt like doing Smooge or doing something in distribution, that's something I really was avoiding, was like, all right, you're like called to try to do something that is uncomfortable and, you know, hire some serious employees that are super professional and find a way to talk to distributors and retailers and you know, now investors, in a way that just like, I would have never, I was happily not doing that before. So,
well, it's,
but it was just like forced growth, you know?
And it's so funny to hear you say that. Cause I just looking, scrolling through the website earlier, as you say, the brewery was really based on the tenets of not having restraints or restrictions or having to be committed to any one thing. And then Smooge, which you could argue would be like a more Wild West canvas and or better vehicle to do whatever you wanted with flavors or driving things in one direction or another, is actually where it's more the mission is clear of like, okay, you have these four, you have these two different sizes of case you can get, and you have four flavors. At least that was the example for what could mm-hmm. ship to home. And it just struck me as you'd almost think those things would be in reverse in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And but I, especially talking to you now, so how quickly did that develop where it's not too hard, and you touched on it earlier about coming back from CBC, kind of getting a sense for like, yeah, this seltzer thing's not going away. Maybe this is something to consider. How quickly did the model shape into a more, even if it's not distribution focused, a distribution scalable model, which very different from the brewery?
Yeah, so it was about a year after. So it was April 2019 that we like had that conversation. We're at Craft Brewers Conference and like basically landed on like if we were going to do something with hard seltzer in it, it would be like a heavily fruited version. And it really was as soon as the pandemic hit, we put through some energy and attention at it and started to conceive of it as like something that could be scaled up. And I think that part of it was like a, like maybe this will be for the same audience or craft beer folks. And I think part of it was like, maybe this is actually for like a seltzer audience where they're like, okay, been okay with like fake flavorings. And like, we get a chance to like wow them with like what real fruit could be in it. And I would say the problem to solve for that was the first like 2 months was like how to do that stably, which, it is definitely a fickle product and like a more of like a science problem, than I think I could have even imagined at the onset. And, so we've poured a bunch of resources. Thankfully we had a guy on our team that was like a cellarman that was way overqualified to be a cellarman. That is like, you know, super, super sharp MacGyver-y Michigan, math and physics, guy who just like we threw into that role and we're like, you're the smooge guy. he's crushed it. But so like we did it to just kind of like feel it out. And we put it, on like our home's website, like to go, like it got a little bit of traction. We put it under like, you know, the smooge name without really telling anybody what it was. And it, you know, took a couple of days, but like we sold through it. And then by the next batch of a different flavor, you know, with a couple hours, like the third batch, it was like crashing our server and people were kind of super stoked about it, which was pretty awesome. And I think there was certainly like early on, it was mostly like that craft beer appeal because that's really who our audience was. But pretty quickly, we saw people that from craft beer glowingly sharing it with their like gluten-free friend or, you know, sharing it with somebody who normally likes White Claw and is like, taste this. And it really like fruit is not a craft beer thing. It's pretty universal. So we were like, why couldn't this be something that is just like ubiquitous in the world? So really from June of 2020 through like November, we were kind of teeing up like a launch into distribution in Michigan. We launched in Michigan in November. And then it really has been like, you know, 2 years of us with like one foot on the accelerator, one foot on the brake, trying to scale it up and get into other states and get learnings from it. But also like not advertising for it yet, just kind of like letting it exist in the world. And so like already we've shifted. One learning we had last year was just like, we are calling it hard smoothie now instead of hard seltzer smoothie, because just seltzer is kind of irrelevant. It's like the base alcohol, but it could be anything. Like, so, and it just confuses people.
Beverage category all to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That was like early on, distributors were like, yeah, people don't get it. So hard smoothie, I think, describes it better, but it also is like the problem with like trying to do something first or early is that there's just like shit people don't know yet, right? Like you just like have to be the one to like learn it. And we were like trying to figure out what to like price it. And we were like, I mean, it's expensive, so we have to make it, you know, something that we can afford long term as the planet's warming. So like, let's probably, you know, make sure that there's some buffer in there. And it's not, you know, with a White Claw, I'm sure all those flavorings are similar pricing, but there's tons of variability in the fruit costing. So, we had to just kind of invent all those things. And then now it's been a big lift of trying to educate, you know, a broad audience about something that like takes some describing. Mm-hmm. It's not something they're familiar with. So, that's kind of the phase we're in is explaining it to people.
if you can just talk a little bit more, because it's a very interesting situation. Talk a little bit more about some of the trial and error things you encountered. Like you say, pushing yourself into a realm where you're not intrinsically like comfortable in, and let alone like during a time when everything was upside down to begin with. It must have just been like constant things being thrown at the wall in a sense, but also just like pushing forward and changing direction a lot, or maybe not. I really don't know. But the pricing things, like more things light in that realm.
Yeah, I think that it, like, some of that is like the naming that I just talked about. I would say, certainly, I don't know how much I'm allowed to get into like the process, but certainly like things around like the process of making sure that it's stable and making sure that like just there's so many factors with like the breakout in order to like it's slower because it's so viscous. So like the timing of actually like capping it without any oxygen getting in is funky. And so there's just like tons of different variables. And of course, like the upside to like having alcohol be in it is that like it is a great preservative, and you know, where Naked Juice and Old Walla is like a 2 to 4 week shelf life refrigerated. Like we're right now at about 6 months, like sub 70 degrees.
Wow.
Damn.
And we can get, we think like with our new packaging setup, a lot of the flavors are closer to 8 to 10 months.
Holy shit.
So that's, I mean, really alcohol is like the reason, and, you know, just making sure we're minimizing DO pickup. So that's been a lot of it. It's just been like, so much of it's been science. And like early on, I mean, I hate to even bring this up, but early on we had like a scenario where we had dialed in a process that was kind of like before we could have our like long-term equipment to really like make sure we were addressing it, the way that we do now, just super safely. We made a slight tweak to our process and had cans exploding. And I was like, all I want to do is like not have any cans explode ever again in my life. It is just like, we had like 2 months of like the team that was there, just like straight up trauma from like every time, like the Instagram, there was a message. You were like, please don't be somebody who like,
the pit in your stomach every time you click.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, but of course, like that's like a formative thing. Like I'm glad it happened then and not, you know, way into the process. Like it was terrible and it felt like the world was ending. And as a result, though, we are just
you
like
learned through that and you
over the top. And
right. There's no better way to not have cans ever explode than having them explode once.
100%.
No greater motivator.
That is exactly right. Oh man. And we're so formed by that. And I feel like that's like it's boring stuff that like it would fall to the, you know, lower in the investment chart, like lab equipment and stuff like that all of a sudden,
and just,
you know, climbed up.
And just for general understanding, is oxygen still the greatest enemy you're playing at, or is it, homogenization? I would think would be another thing you're like having things settle out.
Yeah, settling out. We've just kind of embraced some of it, where we package it upside down in the carton, and tell people to, you know, invert it, you know, 1 to 2 minutes before opening. I would say, yeah, we're mostly concerned about the potential for re-fermentation and really do everything to avoid that. But and then besides that, DO, just since, it can especially some fruits can just get pretty gross quickly if you have a lot of oxygen in there.
Gotcha.
One thing I wanted to dive in with you a little bit as I was looking at it is kind of the separation of the two brands and the what seems to be done very effectively and executed very well. But if it is important to separate those two brands to you, why it was important, if that answer is yes, and kind of the execution of doing that. And one thing I'm unclear of in the way that you tell the story, when you were talking about those first releases and the server crashing, did you taste like test case this or proof of concept this at all through Holmes, or was the distribution of this separate from the beginning? Kind of how did that getting your proof of concept going and then treating the two brands as separate? What were your thoughts around that?
The original thought behind it was, you know, it we knew it could potentially be distributed or that, like, would need advertising if it was distributed, and just kind of was not going to be aligned with like our business plan for Holmes. And then I would say, and like the most candid answer was like, if it went poorly, we were like, we're just going to like throw a match on it and walk away. Like we're just going to, we get to like disentangle it from being Be like, who are those idiots that did Smooge, by the way?
I don't fucking know. So.
Beverage pop-up. It was a beverage pop-up. But so you were, when you say the server crashed, do you mean the Holmes Brewery website? Or did Smooge have its own?
It was like the... Yeah. No, it was out of the Holmes Brewery, like our curbside pickup. Yeah, exactly. Wow. So, and even now to this day, we do these really small like lab batches that are like, you know, I don't know, 3 to 7 barrels, and we'll release them online and have them be picked up at the brew pubs. So there's still like a little bit of, and like at the campus, we have like a Smooge Lab / Holmes, you know, tap area too. So they're like a little intermingled in terms of like, sharing audience, but I would say the separation was, you know, partially for things I just stated and partially like, you know, I don't know where this thing's going. And so if it's something that like gets a life of its own, I just want to make sure that people aren't conflating mm-hmm. Holmes and Smooge. And really locally, I think people know it, and in the craft beer community, they know that they're related, but in the broader market, like people just don't care
totally.
Where it's from. Yeah. So I think you ask most customers who owns White Claw or Truly, and they have no idea. So that was kind of the thought, was let's keep it pretty de-emphasized in terms of who the like root owner is.
Yeah. And you talk about then if it does take a life of its own, kind of what's going to happen. And when you were speaking about it earlier, you kind of talked about like taking this next step, force growth, almost as kind of like put my big boy pants on and grow thing. And you talked about hiring talented professionals, kind of some of these things. I wanted to ask you, with the original Holmes, how much of the like branding and design and those types of things were your own? And then kind of talk about the process through Smooge as you do kind of elevate to a bigger, more scalable thing. Kind of thinks about the way that you're thinking about it, and you bring in an outside creative firm, Skidmore Studios. Was that like a replication of things that worked at Holmes, or was that kind of a growth into a new space for you?
You know, I've always been pretty involved in the design side. I can't execute very well, but I'm an ideas mm-hmm. guy.
Fellow ideas guy.
Like,
you know.
Early on, I have like... like really shitty sketches of like the original Holmes logo that I still have to this day. And like, I definitely talked to like some designers along the way, and we had a different logo that I abandoned. So I feel like we early on, so logo was something that like, I feel like wanted to be meaningful, wanted to be symbolic, wanted to be able to like have that be something that was, you know, you could see it from afar without the name of the brewery and have it be like a wink.
Yeah.
So I think actually Bissell Brothers logo is great like that too. But it's, So I was early on involved in that. And then we have a designer, Christian Ross, who's been with us since, soon after we started, and he's been doing like most of the can designs. He collaborates with some other artists for other things, but he's been just, awesome for years. And then we actually worked with Skidmore Studios just to get like, you know, we were with Holmes, we were doing everything we already loved. And we were like, we really should, if we're going to differentiate the brands at all, we should probably get some outside
voices,
input.
If nothing else.
So we came in with like some ideas of what we wanted it to be. But worked with Skidmore and they were awesome. And then actually, kind of the creative director manager from Skidmore, lived in Ann Arbor, was community Detroit, and, was ended up making the switch and came over to be on our team. So she's, leading our marketing team for Smooge and has done awesome.
Damn.
So really lean on her, and we still use Skidmore for other projects and stuff like that, for like, we just retooled the packaging and use some other content creators. And I think a lot of her role is like managing additional creatives, just because nowadays it's just so much content to produce all the time that it would be tough to house an in-house creative team without any sort of help. That's really been the way that we've navigated it with Smooge is relying on that third party help.
Incredible.
Was there a second part to that question?
That pretty much was it, but you talked about it almost in like a needing to grow and level up phase and hire these talented people and just wanted to explore that decision for you and how kind of how you navigated that, which I think you did a pretty good job answering, my man.
Yeah, we just have, I mean, we have so many times. Whenever I start to get stressed, I will just reflect on, like, I'll run through the roster of our team and be like, man, we're just, like, lucky to be doing this with these folks. So I would say, recently we hired a COO for Smooge, too. It was something that was, like, on my mind and just, like, didn't have the guts to ask the universe for a COO. And literally, he reached out to us. He was, like, recently at SpaceX as a finance director. He was, like, just, like, way, like, you, I couldn't go to SpaceX and be, like, want to come work for Smooge? To
can
anybody?
I get one of these?
But he reached out to us cold.
You said the SpaceX's CFO?
Oh, you know, finance director. So he worked for the CFO.
Yeah. He's coming still, back down to earth, baby.
But, you know, lived in Ann Arbor and was, you know, jived with what we were doing. And
that's amazing.
Loves craft beer and hemp brewery. He's just like just an amazing person and human that, like, was like I said, you can't. It wasn't like I could have gone out and tried to find this person.
Right.
It was like we just created a space. He enjoyed it and, like, found us. And, like, literally when I got his email, I was like, I am being punked for sure. Like, there's no way this guy's reached
out
to us.
Dude, that's so cool. And just in the spirit of pushing, doing something, I'm not trying to to make it more grandiose to compare things to, like, space travel and Mars.
Pretty important.
But
finite
planet,
pretty
but
important.
When you do talk about your Smooge really is a brand that is charting uncharted waters, really, in a lot of ways. So to have someone with that in spirit, presumably really well instilled with them, that's working at a company basically trying to get to Mars. That's that
space
probably
exploration.
can't hurt the ethos
for
at
sure.
All. That's pretty fucking awesome. Wow.
Not at all, but yeah, it's you're exactly right. He's got such a large perspective and understands things that are more grandiose that it does. It's easier for us to be like, yeah, this problem's not that big. Like, it's it's a problem, but it could be worse.
And on that problem front, is scaling distribution really the main focus of the brand right now?
Yeah, so it's getting traction in areas that we're already distributing. We kind of entered markets and just kind of without any sales support or ad support, so which is just not how you get a brand to really take off. So we're just now, after 2 years of kind of just understanding the landscape, are now finally trying to, like, really support the brand and grow it in the markets that we're in.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure been said before, but kind of an obvious question I didn't even ask is where did the name come from? Because it's so perfect. It, like, any great name after the fact with everything together, it's like, yeah, it couldn't be named anything else. So yeah, where did that name come from?
It really was. I am obsessed with five letter names. I don't know why. It's like a little OCD tick of mine. So Holmes, Dozer, Smooge, my kids are Ronan, Mackay, and Sayer, Tommy, me. I think it's like short enough. Five letters, I've always said, is like short enough to, like, be to seem short, but it's also, like, stable enough. Like, four feels stubby, but, like, having that middle letter makes it feel solid.
Yeah, totally.
But it really was like an idiophone for what we thought the product was. Just like, we just felt like it sounded like what it was. And the first time I, like, told a staff member, I was like, we're naming it Smooge. They were like, no, we're not.
Poor instinct. It's such a money name. The moment you see it, you're like, ah.
In the font, like, it's the whole package
is
just like, couldn't be any other thing.
And frankly, after seeing it a few times, I'd seen it, was keeping an eye. The colorways were really good. I was really, really impressed by it. And then I think I saw a picture of you without the cap, like the cap letters, without the S and the I, saw you in a shirt with the OO and the J, and didn't realize that was two. It was like the thing smirking at you. It's two eyes and the J is smirking at you. And it kind of was like, oh, this thing has like an entity, an agency, and like a little personality. And was just like, fuck, is that good, man? I'm not blowing any smoke. Like, the moment I saw that picture of you, like, had a moment of thinking about branding and You know what I mean? Like, I stayed there for a minute. It was really cool.
And that kind of goes back to the same homes thing where you want that, like, pull out, like, if you know, you know, yeah, thing. And so it was, I like that, like, little personality and little, like, little witty and playful kind of, yeah, face was something I was a little obsessed with us trying to find a way to incorporate it. And I'm glad, you know, Skidmore helped us figure out how to do it well.
And that was kind of an execution on their part of kind of taking, like, the words and the descriptions that you kind of give them. I'm looking for this. I want playful. I want this, like, adjectives, and kind of really being able to deliver the thing that you wanted to you.
Yeah, hell exactly. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, this was awesome. I have a million other questions I can ask, but it's really cool to just have the groundwork in the first place. One quick thing just to throw on is how big is direct to consumer, like the how big is shipping in for Smooge?
It's not huge. We just started doing it. We just redid the site to kind of like have that be a focus, but it's, you know, such a gray, complicated world. Yeah. And
yes, it is.
And an already like three-tier system, it's like a fourth tier. Yeah. So it's really, we view it really as like a, you know, drive and trial and let people, you know, give it a taste and then like really direct them to the stores in their area. So cool. It's like I've seen other brands too, that like kind of use it in that way and then scale back or stop doing it. So the regulations around it are just not super fair or friendly. So, yeah. I think hope one day that changes, but for now it's just like almost more marketing.
I got you.
Do you guys do that?
We've looked into it a few times and always come up to the fact is it just wouldn't be even worth it to put in the amount of energy you would need to submit to even make it worthwhile to do in the first place. Then when you look at where the restrictions are for what states you can even ship to, it just didn't make sense.
And it's like changing all the time too. Right. So it's too much.
Oh, well, I think I asked because the website looks so good in that way. I was like, oh, this must be like a huge arm of the business because that like just it looked almost like it had sort of the Matt would know the terms more, but were the little sort of avatar of the different brands that you click on, like if you were buying pants in different colors or something, like it looked exactly yes. like how I want a website to look. Choices were clear, laid out. Yeah. For what it's worth. So
thanks.
hopefully laws change. At least give that avenue some, some of its due credit.
I hope so. That would be great.
And it does seem like a unique thing that people, when a market did exist, something that people would probably be a lot more apt to get shipped to them than beer just intuitively to me.
Yeah. I mean, that would be great. And it seems like you should be able to like charge less because you know, theoretically it's direct to consumer, but my, you know, Alyssa, our marketing director, often says it is the least direct to consumer thing we could be doing. It's like literally touches like four hands before it gets to the consumer. So,
yeah.
I want to wrap it up with just kind of, general forward looking stuff for you, like what you have planned, where you'd like to go next, things to look out for the brands, and let you plug all that. But I wanted to ask you, frankly, like Noah said, incredible conversation. And I had a sense that would be the case. You know what I mean? Kind of was really excited to sit down and do this, but I just wanted to ask you from, if I recall correctly, and there may be nothing there, but there may be, and I can't help myself. From, was looking at your Instagram a while ago, and I think I saw a bathing ape on there in the icon and stuff like that. When it comes to any of the like futurist type tech stuff, blockchain, NFT, is that a space that you're interested in, give focus to in any way that relates to the businesses?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I've definitely been in and out of NFTs, been into cryptocurrency for a while. And I know that's probably like cue the size from probably half your audience, but I just find it intriguing. I think like I had a buddy that I asked to invest in our brewery when we were originally trying to open. And he was like, I can't invest, but if you have any money to put in cryptocurrency, like, and you trust me at all, do it. And so he kind of got me in when I like, you know, just because I trusted him. And since then, I've just like really leaned on him for advice. And
so he said, I can't give you money, but you can give me money.
But you can give me money.
You put your own money in this place if you trust me.
He should be doing, doing sales support for Smooch in those markets. Was that 2016?
But
so that went well.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, and so since then we just talk about it all the time. And I think with that, it was, he was basically part of his simple, like layman's terms was like, hey, if you could invest in like the internet in 1999, uh-huh. would you do that? Of course. And I was like, and that, so that was about Ethereum. And so I stayed in touch with him as like, you know, potential future functionality. And then really I'd say NFTs got my interest mostly because I think there's actually a lot of correlations with NFTs and like a craft beer community or just community building in 100%. General. There's a lot of just like fun Discord channels and people just trying to connect and find a reason to like feel a sense of belonging. And I think that there's like some long-term functionality that I've talked to a bunch of other breweries, that are similarly poking around, ideas related mm-hmm. to NFTs. But I think that there's a world in which like it becomes a really cool tool, to provide access. Like if you have a site that does allow people to buy, you know, limited release beers and it's a collab with us, like being able to share like our NFT groups and give access utilizing their like NFTs is like, you know, token access to be able to make a purchase. Mm-hmm. But I think with anything, like right now, so much of the hype and so much of the, you know, misconception about it, or I guess where the attention is really about the value storage in NFTs, when really like, I'm not super excited about that. Like, I think that's could be fatty, but I really like the idea that there's like functionality and community building that it will be born from it totally. Eventually. So if you're a business thinking about doing it, it's going to be pretty disingenuous if you are doing it to like make money off of like some JPEG. but if it's serves a purpose or makes it somehow easier, more fun, or, you know, more community building, then like, you know, when we can come up with an idea that's more aligned with that and is like about, if we get a dollar from this community, we're going to put it back into the community and have it be, you know, net neutral and something that like adds excitement to like an in-person business, then yeah, I think I'd be all on board
100%.
For that.
And just for a couple of my 2 cents, but I think you see this at the beginning of a lot of these new things, like kind of the fuckery phase, where the store of value and
that's a Noam Chomsky quote, right?
But the only purpose being that hoping the person that comes after me is going to pay more for this thing. And then the crumble and the washout happens, which is kind of like what we've just gone through and what we're going through right now. And then you start the slow build to what it's actually going to be. But to everything you said, what really bothered me about it was kind of agreeing with everything that you said. Like, oh, this maps to the craft beer community so well, where this utility is going to be in the near term or medium term is like levels of access, degrees of utility to do more in communities that you are a part of. But then the big breweries, which usually have to move so incredibly slow, big businesses, were all very early during that kind of that fuckery phase to put out NFTs. You had like Anheuser-Busch putting out NFTs, and I was very surprised by that. And I think it's kind of shut that down, I think, in any real way for quite a while. And then we'll have the slow build, like you're talking about, where good breweries use them for good access in really thoughtful, creative ways. But I was so surprised by the big breweries being so quick to it.
Yeah, and like most things, they ruined just it. Execute so poorly on stuff like that. So and that's why I don't think that scorched earth. I think because they just didn't really do anything useful with it. I think there's like a heavy lift to get to make sure like everyone's invited to the NFT community too. It is just a lot of like white wealthy dudes in those chats, and you know, that's who you see in that community right now. And that's the other piece, is like I would want it to be community building and arms wide open to a broad mm-hmm. audience. And so we've talked about doing it for like a member program eventually. And I was like, if we do that, we're going to do like tutorials to show people how to set up a wallet and like just like walk them through it to like make sure that it's not something that's like overly intimidating. And I think the functionality to like get, you know, Ethereum or, you know, cryptocurrency in a wallet is like getting easier. Mm-hmm. But really it's going to be people having utility purposes that are going to drive them to the blockchain. So I'd rather be a little bit late and do it right than early and have people think we're
well said,
advantage of them.
And that's why I asked you, you know, you're able to play in these spaces in a really thoughtful, intentional way. That seems really honest, and I'm really excited to see what you do in those places with these kind of tools that'll be available in the near future, man. Really, really cool.
Cool. Thanks, man.
You want to do a three bay for the ages?
Oh boy.
Pause for dramatic effect.
Yeah, I'm doing it big. I'm doing it dramatic. We've got a little bit of working through the lag. But here, you tell me if I'm off base here, because I'm going to do something we've never done. I think with your clarity and your acumen, you're going to nail this and you're going to do it perfectly. But you have three babies. You've got Dozer, you've got Smooge, and you've got Holmes. And you've also got three boys. I want you to put your three kids with the three businesses for any reason on earth, and tell us why one could relate to the other.
Oh.
Is it too personal?
No. Yeah. I think my boys will love hearing their name.
Okay.
That's amazing.
Cool. Great.
Yeah, so we got Holmes, Smooge, mm-hmm. and Dozer, Ronan, Sayer, and Ronan Mackay.
30 letters all together.
I have to say that Holmes is actually Mackay is my middle child. And I'm going to go out of order in terms of middle businesses. I would say Mackay is Holmes, where he's. Yeah, he's definitely like a little more like low key and to himself and is in his own mm-hmm. zone. So I'd say personality wise, that's in contrast to Smooge, it's like out there and bold, a little bit more playful. My oldest one, Ronan, is definitely the
Smooge.
The Smooge, the out there. He's also, you know, vying for a job at any of them, and he's only nine. So he he's a hustler, getting out in the world. And then Dozer, I guess I have to give it to Sayer, my youngest, although he's definitely, you know, the like physical specimen of the three. He's just like kind of a freak of a 3-year old. And a little bit of a sociopath. Like he's definitely the last child. He's trying to make sure we don't have any more kids. I would say that might be the
living a caffeinated life. Naturally caffeinated life.
Third kid, third business. And like, you know, having a third business puts me in a cap to not want to have any other businesses for a little bit. I think that's,
oh man,
that's probably about right.
Incredible, brother.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really, really enjoyed this conversation and appreciate you taking the time, man.
Oh, likewise, guys.
Yeah, hope to see you again in person sometime, sooner rather than later, man. But it's inspiring, really, just to talk to someone that definitely is on the same wavelength but doing very, very different things than we are. That's kind of where I get the most out of this podcast at the end of the day is really – it's why we wanted to do in the first place, getting that next level on what peers are doing. So I don't know. Really cool stuff I'll be thinking about a lot, man.
And likewise, too, to you guys, I should have said this at the onset, but I really, yours is like the beer podcast I listen to, for the most part. And really, even early on, I really enjoyed listening to some of our friends be interviewed by you guys. And, but then of course, like early in COVID, it was nice that you just were talking to people, like understanding that we were just kind of a shared experience and talking to other people who are in similar situations. So love that you guys are doing it. Really appreciate the good work you guys are doing. On the pod and at the brewery.
Oh, thank you so much, man. Yeah. Thank you so much. Means the world.
Really does.
Well, get back to those three boys. We'll catch up with you again soon, man. Thanks again.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'll hit
you with
an email to follow up. Thank you so much, man. Have a good night.
Yeah,
I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden it will all become lovely. The flower that opens.